Today is Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parshas Zohar.
So we're not going to have class next week. You need to know that. And don't dress up. And, unless you want to look like Eagle Man, I suggest...
Look at those low rates.
Yeah. I suggest you not do it. But anyway, I want to take the opportunity to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos. I want to thank Young Israel and for the kindnesses that they've shown this class and the generosity, and it's really appreciated. Also, I'd like to thank those that help with setting up the room, and for helping to schlep, food from my car. It really is a big help, and it takes a lot of pressure off of me personally. So I want to thank you for helping, and God bless all of us. Please take your phones and please silence them. Bring them down to a vibration or something of that nature. And we're going to be davening. We're going to be a little bit short today. We're going to be davening Marav. And so please make sure that you don't run away very fast without making sure that we have 10 men. Please, there's several of us that need to daven, and it would really be appreciated. And is there anything else, Rav Moshe, that you can think of?
Okay. I just want to mention that the shiur is dedicated by Mrs. Leonard in memory of her mother, Mrs. Borg. Mrs. Leonard's parents, both Davent and my shul, they were very, very fine people, really nice people. And the mother's name is Chayasara Basalta Benzina HaKoin. I remember very often the Mishaberachs that her brother would make for them, and subsequent that, Kelmoles, and the name, the name brings back memories. It's not just off the paper. Okay, it should be. This week is Parsha Zachar. It's also Purim coming up, as was mentioned, Thursday. Wednesday night is Purim. Thursday is Purim. There's no shiur on Purim because people are busy. Actually, in the time of the Gemara, it's brought down that they didn't have shiurim on Purim because people were busy with the Suda. This is a time that we are not able to have shiur. All right. In any case, so I'm going to speak about Zechiras HaMalek. We might touch a little bit on Purim about the Megillah also. Now, the mitzvah, the Torah discusses in Tanakh Amalek in four different places. One is in Parshas Bishalach, and that's the Kriya that we read on Purim, Vayavo Amalek. And that is nine psukim long, that Kriya. It's actually distinguished because generally you do not have a Kriya that's less than 10 psukim. And this is a question that Yerushalmi already deals with. How is it, I'm not addressing that question tonight, but how is it that we could have a reading of nine psukim when there is a basic requirement of 10 psukim? Then, Then we have Parsha Zohar, which will be the maftir of this coming Shabbos. There we're commanded to remember what Amalek did to us. And more than that, we are commanded to destroy Amalek. That doesn't mean, that doesn't mean that you should go in the street and you say, well, this guy is Amalek and shoot him. I have to put that down right at the beginning. According to most opinions, the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek is only in time of war. And there are a lot of prerequisites for war. According to my father, I'm not saying that's the only opinion, but according to my father, you needed a Navi, because the Torah says, Milchama Lashem Ba'amolek Midor Dor. He bases it on something his uncle, the Brisker Rav, said, Milchama Lashem, it is a war for God. Now, we're the ones who take up the guns, the Jewish people are the ones who are doing the fighting, but it's only when they're told by message of God to fight Amalek. So, you have to, and then I think that it doesn't necessarily have to be a Navi, it could be through Urim V'Tumim. Also, there is a dispute. According to the Rambam's opinion, there are two texts in the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos. According to one text in the Rambam, it says Yada Chazaka, he doesn't mention it. It's a question why. But in the Sefer HaMitzvos, it seems the Rambam's opinion is that you can't go to war. We're not talking about a war of defense. We're talking a waging war, unless you get the approval of the Urim V'Tumim. Even in the Second Commonwealth, the Urim V'Tumim did not have the ability to transmit heavenly messages. So the Jewish people, halachically, could only go to war if they, to a war of defense. But to wage war, there you need the approval of heaven. And even in the second base of Mikdash. Now, there is one text in the Rambam that's talking only by not by a Mochemes Mitzvah, not a war of Mitzvah. Okay, but there is the it seems more and more evidence that the correct text is the text that it has to be that you need the approval of heaven, even a war of mitzvah, like Mochemes Amalek, you need the approval of heaven. So it wouldn't apply. In addition, it's very likely war against Amalek is only when there's a nation of Amalek. And somewhat today, it's hard to associate any particular nation with being actual genetic descendants of Amalek. Everybody is descendants of everybody practically today. And, somebody put on the internet, I mentioned it, that I'm a 64th or 67th cousin, one place removed.
47.
Huh? 47. 47. I'm sorry, 47. 47th cousin of Trump. I don't know if it's true or not. There's a person I'm friendly with who's in genealogy. So I told him that. He says, just about half of Europe could claim the same thing. So I said, yeah, but how many Jews? So, okay, but in any case.
What would the Rambam say on the eve of the Six-Day War?
No, that's a war of defense.
That's what it's not war yet.
First of all, the closing down of Aqaba and the putting of the troops, mobilization of the troops in Sinai, and the preparation to where that in itself was an initiation of war. You don't have to wait. You don't have to wait.
We hold that.
Yeah.
But where do you see it
today? Yeah, that's
the
fence.
It's
based on Habal Lahar Hashkem Lahar Go. If somebody comes to kill you, you go and kill him first. You don't have to wait till you're dead to kill him. So, okay. So that's. All right, anyway. So that's but there is a difference between it's interesting. This is just a side point. I want to point out there is a dispute, and I'll get more into it toward the end, depending on the time we have left. There is a dispute between the Magen Avraham and the Mishneh Berurah whether the mitzvah of Schiras Amalek, remembering what Amalek did, can be fulfilled with the Parsha B'Shalach. In other words, we on Shabbos Zachar read Zachar Eis Asher Asalachal Amalek in Parshas Kisetze, which tells us you got to remember what Amalek did, and you have to destroy them, etc., etc. But in Parshas B'Shalach, the Torah says, "Vayovo Amalek." Amalek came, and Milchama LaHashem BaAmalek Dor. It's a war for God from generation to generation. Amocho Emcheseich Amalek. God says He will destroy Amalek. It doesn't emphasize the obligation of the Jewish people to destroy Amalek. So, because of that, the Mishneh Berurah says that the mitzvah, the araisa, the biblical mitzvah of reading the Parsha of Amalek can only be fulfilled with Parsha Zachar in Parshas Kisetze, not with Vayavah Amalek that discusses about Amalek coming, because he says there the obligation is not mentioned. Now, the truth of the matter is, from the Rishonim, it does not appear like the Mishneh Berurah. It doesn't appear like the Mishneh Berurah from the Rambam, because the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvah says that why did Shmuel Hanavi, when he killed Agog was the king of Amalek, and he said to Agog, just like you made many Jewish women lose their children, your mother is going to lose her child also before he killed him. Why did he have to mention that? So the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvah says, because thereby he was Mekayim Schiras Amalek. In other words, the mitzvah, from the Rambam it seems that the mitzvah of, and the Chinuch is explicit to that fact, the mitzvah of remembering Amalek and the mitzvah of destroying Amalek are tied one to the other. One who's not required in the mitzvah, the Chinuch says, of fighting against Amalek is not required in the mitzvah of remembering what Amalek did. Shmuel was at that point going to kill Amalek, so he became required to remember the deeds of Amalek. And it wasn't just, not only the deeds that they did at the time the Jews went out of from Egypt, but even the deeds they did in his time, that was sufficient. And he didn't say there, I have a responsibility to kill you, I'm required to kill you. So you see from the Rambam that the mitzvah of remembering what Amalek did can be fulfilled, according to the Rambam, just remembering the wickedness of Amalek. So that's so clearly, Vayav Amalek, perhaps even more than Zachar, tells us about the wickedness of Amalek. And then, I think there's another thing. Even if we assume, like the Mishneh Berurah, even if we assume, like the Mishnah Berurah, that there is a, that you have to, the mitzvah remembering Hamolek is remembering the mitzvah of killing him. That's part of the mitzvah. So the word Milchama Lashem Ba'Amolek Midor Dor, a war for God against Hamolek in every generation, could be interpreted two ways. It could be interpreted as God's war, or it's the war that we are waging for God. So if we say Milchama Lashem Ba'Amolek Midor Dor, there is a war for God against Hamolek. So it could be that it's included in that parsha. That's one thing. Then the Ravid is very explicit, and that I'll get in hopefully later on. The Ravid says that the biblical mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek, remembering Amalek, is fulfilled with one of four things: the two parshas in the Torah, which I already mentioned, the parsha in Shmuel, which is the Haftorah of Shabbos about Shaul. And also he says Hilchos Megillah, which simply means the Megillah. So you see, in the Megillah, it certainly doesn't mention the requirement of destroying Amalek. Amalek isn't even mentioned by name. So it would appear, and he says explicitly, the Ravid in his Parish in the Safra says explicitly, like the Magen Avraham, that with the Parsha in Bishalach, of Ayava Amalek and Felt. The reason I mention it, because it's important to know, sometimes it happens that a person is not able to be in shul on Shabbos, so he got sick or whatever it is, and people get paranoid or whatever it is. So as far as the biblical mitzvah is concerned of Zechiras Amalek, you can fulfill that in the shul, when you hear the reading of the Torah on Purim. So I'm just mentioning that. So that's okay. Now, but the question is, but if you take a look at the difference between Parshas Bishalach and Parshas Kiseitze, in Kiseitze the emphasis Mocho Timcha Zecha Amalek, you will destroy Amalek. It's a command. And in Parshas Bishalach, Mocho Emcha, God says, I will destroy Amalek. Mocho Emcha, I will destroy Amalek. And some of the Chizkuni, and I recall, I think I saw it in Das Kainim also, some of the Mefarshim, they cite a Medrash. It seems, one hand we say, you will destroy Amalek, and the other hand it says, God will destroy Amalek. How are we to understand it? So the Chizkuni says that until Amalek starts up with the Beis HaMikdash, until he wages war against the Beis HaMikdash, it's Mocho Timcha Zeich Amalek. You will destroy Amalek. But when he comes and he destroys the Beis HaMikdash, then it's Mocho Emcha, I, God, will destroy. Now, the question is, what is the significance? Now, we know God punishes Mida Kenegan Mida. There is a relationship between the sin and the punishment for the sin. Why is that? In other words, because God just doesn't punish in the form of taking vengeance. But God's teaching. Sometimes it's to teach the person who's punished, and sometimes it's to teach everybody else. And especially when it comes to Amalek, because the concern, why is the Torah so strong against Amalek? Why is the Torah so emphasizes about Amalek? It's because the impact that Amalek had on the other nations. Because Amalek set the example. It's very interesting. When you take a look in the Pasuk in Shmuel, when Shmuel tells Shaul, go destroy Amalek, he says, Me'ish v'arish, okay, but he says, even the animals you have to destroy. Peter would probably have protested. Yeah. Okay. So to destroy even the animals of Amalek, and so Rashi says there, why do you have to destroy the animals? So Rashi says, and there is a machlokas rishonim. He says you have to understand that the Amalekim were magicians. Black magic, okay, and they had the ability to turn themselves to look like animals. By the way, that doesn't seem to be very difficult when you look around. That here, I'm talking. Okay, but they had the ability. So an Amalekite could have turned himself to look like an animal. So the only way to make sure that you got them all was to kill the animals. That's what Rashi and Shmuel says. Problem is, Rashi and Chumash says, Mocho Timcha Zecher Amalek, erase the memory of Amalek. It doesn't say Mocho Timcha Amalek, erase Amalek, but the memory of Amalek. He says, even their oxen, their sheep, that they no one should say, this is an ox from Amalek. So the question is, why did Rashi and Shmuel have to give this strange explanation because they were magicians? Why don't you just say, that was the mitzvah, the way Rashi says it? Now, the Rambam doesn't even mention the whole thing about the mitzvah of destroying the animals of Amalek. And from the Mechilta, it appears that there was a mitzvah of destroying the animals of Amalek. So the question is why. Now, the truth is, the Rambam had a very rational approach, and the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim did not believe in magic. He says that the Chartumim of Mitzrayim, the magicians, I don't know how you, the Chartumim, magicians of Egypt, it was, they were good, you know, Haramis, Enayim, they knew how to make it look like, what was that cartoon movie of The Prince of Egypt, yeah. So, apparently they had consultants who knew the Rambam, so when they had the Chartumim making the sea turn into adding to the blood, the Nile turning blood, they had them throwing in some, my children were watching it, so I watched it with them. So just they're throwing some red chemicals in a manner that wasn't noticed. So obviously they were following the Rambam's opinion. Anyway, but the Rambam's opinion is that there was no such thing as magic, but they fooled everybody. And that's very reasonable. So I want to understand it. Using the Rambam's approach, I in my disposition, as was my father's disposition, not that he denied that others said differently, but our disposition was always to understand it from that perspective. the question is why is it that they had to kill even the animals? I think it's the people in those days believed that the Amalekites were magicians and were able to turn themselves to look like animals. Consequently, the people in those days would think that even after the nation of Amalek was destroyed, that some of them survived. Shelo Yomer, they shouldn't say this is an animal of Amalek, because if they could point to an animal of Amalek, they'll say some of the Amalekites got away. What do we care if the Amalekites got away? Because as Rashi tells us at the beginning, that everybody was scared to fight with the Jews. And then Amalek came, jumped into the hot pot, and he was destroyed. But the hot pot became cooler. And everybody, if they think that there is a possibility that they could get away with destroying the Jew, then they will do it. And who gave them that inspiration? Amalek gave them that inspiration. So the reason Amalek, there is a mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, to eradicate Amalek, is not just because of what Amalek did and is capable of doing, as I've mentioned in the past, but it's more than that. It's because Amalek, by its very being, inspires others to wage war and to try to destroy the Jewish people. Now, when we take a look at when does Amalek, but we have to understand, why is Amalek so determined to destroy the Jewish people? Why are they so determined? Now, historically, chronologically, when does Amalek come? By Yavo Amalek, they come at a particular moment. Why specifically at that moment do they come? Amalek comes, and then the Torah tells us about Yisroel, and then is Kabbalah Satorah. And it's not clear, there are different opinions, whether Yisroel actually came after the Sinai, after the Torah was given, or whether it was before. But the reason Yisroel is mentioned is because, in a certain sense, Amalek Matan Torah represents the conversion, or the completion of the conversion of the Jewish people. And in order to introduce us to the idea of the acceptance of the Torah tells us about Yisroel, who in a sense was a ger, who converted to Judaism. Okay, so the Torah places Amalek right before Matan Torah. To me it seems that Amalek came, Amalek felt desperate to stop the Jewish people from receiving the Torah, from coming to Sinai. And the question is, why was Amalek so determined to prevent the Jewish people from coming to Sinai? Now, we have to understand the origin of Amalek. Where does Amalek has his origin? We know Amalek is a descendant of Esau, and he's the son of Eliphaz. Now, Eliphaz had a number of wives, but he had one concubine, and her name was Timnah. And Timnah wanted, according to our sages, Timnah wanted to convert, to go through Geras. And the Medrash says that the Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, now Avraham wasn't around then, so it means it's probably a certain policy that Avraham instituted, so that it prevented her from going through conversion, and the Gemara implies that they acted wrong in doing so. Now the question is, why did they prevent her? So it seems it's possible that she was considered, though those days there was no halacha of mamzer, but she apparently was born in a relationship that involved adultery, and she herself got involved in the relationships that the Torah would later forbid. Actually, even before the Torah was given, there were relationships that were forbidden, but but there was no halacha of mamzeris. But the facts are there was such a concept, not a halachic concept, But there was such a concept. So it could be that was the reason they didn't want them. But there was no halacha mamzeres at that point. And even if there was, by non-Jews, there clearly is no mamzeres. The halacha mamzeres is only by Jews. So our sages say that it was a mistake. She should have been accepted. But she was so determined to be part of Avram's family, which she was anyway, but to reinforce that, so that she agreed to be a concubine to Eliphaz, who was a grandson of Avram and Yitzchak. So a great grandson of Avram and Yitzchak. So that's why she, and the punishment for not accepting Timna, our sages tell us, was that she had a child like Amalek, who brought about all of the problems that a large degree of the problems that we had to deal with throughout our history. The impact, the influence of Amalek. Amalek as a nation might cease to have existed. I'm not going to get into the halachic issues there. But the impact and the influence of Amalek is still there. Now, so in a sense, she wanted to be identified with, in a sense, with the chosenness. With the chosenness of the Jewish people. Now, where the people are chosen, now we find all kinds of contradictions. At what point did the Jews become Jews? Did they become Jews with the selection of Avram, or did they become Jews at the time of the giving of the Torah? And the truth of the matter is, I'm not going to go into all the details, but the way the Tosfos HaRosh and Sufis mentions it, that the initial chosenness is with Avram, but the completion is with Matan Torah. So in a sense, the Amalek sees itself as identified with Avraham and Yitzchak, whether halachically they are or not is a separate issue, but it's no issue, they really aren't halachically. But there is going to be a Tosfos Kedusha, an additional identification of chosenness with the giving of the Torah. So there is this sense of desperation, the desperation that Timna gave over. In a sense, a certain sense of jealousy. They saw themselves as being descendants of Avram, but they knew once the Torah is given, they will not be identified with that chosenness. So there is this desperation to prevent the Jewish people from coming to Har Sinai, to Mount Sinai, to have revelation, to have that sense of closeness with God. And at this point, now I've always mentioned the Ramban. The Ramban asked the question that the theme of Chumash Shemos is Exodus. What is the Mishkan, the second half of Chumash Shemos? What does it have to do with the Exodus? It should be in Chumash Vayikra. And he says the purpose of the Mishkan of the Tabernacle was to take the sanctification of Sinai. And the sanctification of Sinai is the experience of Sinai together with the Torah of Sinai, the receiving of the Torah, and bring that to Jerusalem and to the Beis HaMikdash. So what the Beis HaMikdash is the perpetuation of Sinai. If Amalek was not able to stop the Jewish people from coming to Sinai, they want to stop the perpetuation of Sinai. They want the Jewish people to be seen as having been rejected. Yes, they might have been chosen, but they have been rejected. I mentioned all the time the story with my uncle. Mention again, I like the story. When the Pope John, who was actually the nicest of the popes, at least in my lifetime, he instituted, but that was, he died before he was able to, whatever. When he instituted that, he tried to make ecumenical meetings, and the Vatican was pushing it. So at that time, my uncle took an extremely strong stand against ecumenical meetings between religions. He said, you have your religion, we have our religion. As I always mention, at my graduation from Roosevelt University, so the guest speaker was Uthant, the Secretary General of the UN. Okay, I was the only, me and my brother were the only two graduates who did not stand up to give him a standing ovation, okay, but from his speech. But Uthant, he concluded his speech, he said, let Jews be better Jews, let Christians be better Christians, let Muslims be better Muslims, something I disagree with, let Hindus be better Hindus, etc., etc. And that was basically what my uncle said. You go your way, we'll go our way. Anyway, and my uncle had a very strong influence in preventing these meetings. Some there were individual Orthodox rabbis did go to the Vatican to have meetings with them. I read the report, nothing great over there. They explained why you're not allowed to drink the wine that was touched by a non-Jew. But nothing of real significance. And they found to be their greatest challenge. Anyway, but when they were served wine at their kosher meal, they didn't drink it. Anyway, the Pope sent the guy, the cardinal that was in charge of arranging the ecumenical meetings to meet my uncle. My aunt, this was right around this time, was right before Purim, just before my aunt passed away. So my uncle said he'll go to the hotel to meet him. And he had a debate with him. There were two other people in the room. Both of them wrote over what went on in the debate. But at one point, my uncle said to him, tell me. So he said that he's told my uncle that the church tried to save Jews during World War II. So my uncle said to him, no, that's not true. But let's put that aside. Let's talk about the future. My uncle said to him, tell me, if we would want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, this was just before the Six-Day War, would you let us, what would be your position? And he says he didn't know what, he got confused. And my uncle, he said to my uncle, could you halachically do it? My uncle said, that's not your business, that's our business. So he said, my uncle said he couldn't answer that question. Why? Because, as I mention all the time, I used to, when I took trips to Israel and I would go to Masada, I would listen in to the Christian groups, and the tour guide would say, he would talk about how the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and everything, and how the Jewish people became rejected, and this is where the our Messiah started the new religion, etc., etc. In other words, they see themselves as the new Israel. And so long as there was 1,800 years of Golos, of exile, you see the Jews are rejected. 48, they didn't have Jerusalem. So this is why the Beis HaMikdash is the symbol of the chosenness of the Jewish people, and that's what Amalek Amalek hates about the Jew is the chosenness of the Jewish people, because that's the root of Amalekius. They wanted that chosenness, that specialty, to be the descendants of Avram and Yitzchak. They wanted that, and they knew they could claim that until Matan Torah. But after Matan Torah, they couldn't claim that. So they had to somehow get rid of the giving of the Torah. So that's one reason. So I think that's the way we could understand the Chizkuni, that God says to Amalek, he's starting up with the Jewish people, Smocho Timcha, you start up when you try to break the relationship, when you try to break the relationship between me and the Jewish people, then I will take care of you. It doesn't have to be with an open war. It could be with other nations and everything. There is no nation of Amalek anymore. It was Mochu Emchez Echer Amalek. But the influence of Amalek is still there. Now, one other thing I just wanted to suggest. I mentioned already that the Ravid says that the biblical mitzvah of Schiras Amalek, remember Amalek, could be fulfilled, he said, with reading the two parshas in the Torah, either one, or the Perek in Shmuel, or the Megillah. But he doesn't call it Megillah, he calls it Dinei Megillah, the laws of the Megillah. The question is, why is it the laws of the Megillah? And I think, because if one looks at the Megillah, Megillah Esther, yeah, it's not Megillah Rus. So, take a look at Megillah Esther. So, what is the whole plot of the Megillah? The whole plot of the Megillah is to explain why we have to perform all the mitzvahs on Purim. Shalachmanis, Matanos Levyonim, Suda, reading the Megillah. The Megillah, that is the plot. That is the goal. At one time, and I think this is a proof for my uncle, there's a dispute between my uncle and the Brisker Rav about the mitzvah of Megillah. There is a mitzvah to read the Megillah. My uncle said the mitzvah of reading the Megillah is a special mitzvah of Talmud Torah, of learning Torah. And the Brisker Rav said, no, of course, the Megillah is Torah, but it's not a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's just Pesumah Nisa, making the miracle known. I think, and this was always the proof for it, but I noticed in this notes of my Uncle Shiram just before I came that he cited that proof also. He mentions the Brisker Rav, that the fact that they derived in discussing the mitzvah of Schiras Amalek refers to it as Dinei Megillah. He says, we see it's Talmud Torah, but he doesn't explain why. But I think, in other words, the whole plot of the Megillah is to show the mitzvos of Purim. So the Ravid refers to it as learning the laws. The mitzvah of Megillah is learning the laws of Purim. But the question is, why we understand it's true. The whole plot leads to that. But in discussing Schiras Amalek, the mitzvah of remembering Amalek, why should the Ravid make reference to the conclusion of the Megillah? It seems the more important part is the treachery of Haman, Agogi, the treachery. It seems the fact that he refers to it as Dinei Megillah, as the laws of the Megillah, that somehow Schiras Amalek is accomplished by learning about Shalachmanis, about the Suda and all that. How is Schiras Amalek accomplished by that? He should have just said Megillah Esther. He's not talking about the Megillah. He's talking about Schiras Amalek, remembering Amalek. And I think that part of the mitzvah of Schiras Amalek is not only to remember that there was a nation that attacked us. It's not only to remember. It's not only to remember that, as the Mishnah Berurah says, that there is a requirement under the proper circumstances of destroying the nation of Amalek, but it's also to remember, to know, shouldn't say remember, to know that we are going to be, that Amalek is going to be destroyed. Very often we have this belief that we are too weak. And ultimately, Nixon's Secretary of State,
Kissinger,
I read, he said that Israel is going to be destroyed eventually. We have to have confidence. And we say, according to the Machzor Vitri, we say in Kaddish every time, Yehei Shmei, Yeshmei Rabba Mevorach. See, so what Yehei Shmei Rabba? He translates, let your name be big, because Chazal tell us, Kase Ka, the name of God is not complete. Ein Shmi Shalem. What does Shmi Shalem mean? We recognize a person by the name. So long as Amalek is around, God will not be fully recognized. Because so we're looking forward to the time, and we have to believe that it can be accomplished. That's part of the mitzvah spirit of Amalek. Sometimes we see that Amalek controls armies, inspires armies. Haman was one person, but that's Schiris Amalek also, because he inspired Achashverosh, he inspired a nation to try to destroy the Jewish people. And when we have our Suda, we have our meal, and we show happiness, and we show joy, we're showing that we succeeded, not Hunter. And we have to recognize, I remember, you know, it's interesting, my mother had a cousin, Moshe Aaron Davis. He was the shamish in the shul. He was a very nice man, but he lost his family during the war, and then he got married, and he had a son who now today publishes all kinds of svarim. And at his bar mitzvah, he went over to my mother and he said, "You think I'm happy?" He said, "It's like knives in me." And I understand it. I'll tell you, you know. Having sometimes when you have tragedy and then you have happy occasions, you're reminded of he's probably reminded of the bar mitzvahs that he didn't have. And my mother said to him, "You have the biggest revenge on Hitler." She said, I remember at the bar mitzvah, she said, "Look, Hitler tried to destroy you to make sure you not have any descendants, and you now have a child that's coming bar mitzvah and everything. But by the way, he was dying of cancer at the time. At his son's wedding, he was extremely happy. That I saw. So, but at that point, in other words, sometimes we feel that the whole world is against us, and I've seen. There were some survivors that they felt it's going to happen again, and whatever it is, they think we have to have confidence in the survival of the Jewish people, that Amalek will not succeed, and I think that's why the Ravid emphasizes Chizchiras Amalek is to know of our requirement to celebrate the fall of Amalek, not just the fall of Haman, but the fall of Amalek, because we have to know that Amalek will not succeed. We have to have confidence in the future of the Jewish people. And I think this is Kimacho Emche Zecher Amalek Mitachas HaShemayim. It's, and even Macho Timcha, you shall destroy, to be read two ways. It's a command, and it's also a prophecy. Machu Timcha, you will destroy Amalek. And that's because we have the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Machu Timcha.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just want to mention, please, get off the tables, leave the tablecloths on, and gentlemen, we need a minion. Please don't leave until you count 10 men davening.
And no class next Thursday.
No class next Thursday.